All Talks of Life with Chris Viniquez.
It is the holiday season. Welcome back to All Talks of Life. I'm your host, Chris Viniquez, and I just had a birthday. Thank you for all those that reached out. God has blessed me to see the 35th year of life. God also blessed me to see another wonderful Thanksgiving with my family. I hope that you enjoyed yours. I hope you had all your stuffing, all your turkey, all your rice. I hope that you had endless amounts of fun with your family. I hope y'all took out the baked mac and cheese, the collard greens, the salad, the cookies, the cheesecake, all the good stuff. Candy yams, one of my favorites. Loaded mash. I mean, the list could keep going and going. I know that right now you're listening, you're saying, hey, you forgot this, you forgot that, you forgot the other. Well, you know what? Everybody has something different they like to chew on, they like to feast on. Just continue to mention as I talk right now. I had a wonderful Thanksgiving. Had a wonderful time with my family, friends of the family. Every year, you know, it's just an enjoyable experience. Obviously, you got the food, but most of all, you got the family, you got the friends, you got the fellowship, and it's awesome. It's great. We're in the midst of some tough times right now, but we have good times. We have good things going on. No matter how hard, no matter how things difficult get, no matter how difficult things get, easy for me to say, we always got family and friends. We always got God's grace. We always have the Lord looking out for us. And that has definitely been the case throughout the 35 years that God has blessed me with. That has definitely been the case every single Thanksgiving. Never gone hungry. That has been the case every Christmas. Never gone without being able to receive or give a gift. God has definitely been good. It is the holiday season, as they will say on the Christmas radio. But I do got some stuff to get into today. I want to get into the subject of tough times. I want to talk to you a little bit about tough times. I'm going to get into in the next segment some NFL. I got some week 13 picks. I have something to say about the Packers and Rodgers, the whole Odell situation. I got something to say. Well, I got a friend that is going to go and speak on the situation. You're going to hear him in a little while. And also, I got the ever-evolving answer to the holiday question of movie buffs. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie? So that's coming up in a little while, but I want to get into the second book of Kings in chapter 6 and 7. And in relation to what's going on nowadays, because nowadays we got some tough times going on. And part of it is because of inflation. Now, here's the great thing that I love about the Word of God. I love that I could go in the Word of God and I love that I can see answers. I love that I can see issues and see solutions. And people say, well, the Bible doesn't have every answer. I would say that the Bible does have every answer. Now, sometimes for those answers, you got to read in between the lines. But sometimes for those answers, they're direct. Now, I'm not saying that the Bible has an answer of should you go work, you know, for X company tomorrow or should you marry X person. The Bible is not exhaustive like that. But the problems of life, the issues in our heart and in our minds, you can read in between the lines and the answers are there. God will show us how to manage through every situation of life. God will show us how to excel through every situation of life because He is the answer. God Himself has the answer before you even give the question. So, with all that being said, Let me get into this right here. I want to relate it to nowadays. Nowadays, we got some inflation going on, and it's the holiday season, and a lot of people got issues buying gifts. A lot of people got issues, you know, getting a job. Things aren't like they were in 2020 or 2019 and before that, you know, when there was a lot of surplus, there were a lot of good times, a lot of money. Things are a little tight right now because everything is on the rise. Ever since January 2021, when the new president was sworn in, inflation has upticked by at least 5%. The average American family has seen a rise in the cost of living of about $175 a month. We're talking about bills and food and clothing. So an extra $175 a month going out of the pockets of the American family due to inflation. Now, the reason for inflation, I'm not here to talk about politics today. Obviously, a lot of the things that the new administration has done has brought about inflation. But I'm not going to get deep into that because I'm not here to speak politics today. But what I am here to tell you is that this is not unprecedented. This is not the first time, and this is not the last time that you will see inflation, that you will see the pockets of families hurting, things being harder to come by, businesses going down, all these things, et cetera, that are happening today that you see going on in America and in the world. Not the first time and not the last time. Now, you say, hey, it's not the last time. Okay, great. We'll see what happens down the road. But you say it's not the first time. Can you point me to something? Yes, I can. I can point you to the book of 2 Kings chapter 6. After the 24th verse, here's what it says. Oh, here's the story. Let me set it up for you. The king of Syria came, and the Syrians, and they came to Samaria. They didn't kill anybody. Obviously, these are sworn enemies. But Syria, they didn't kill anybody in Samaria. Here's what they did. They took their food. They took their clothes. They took possibly their gold. Obviously, in those days, gold was worth everything. So was agriculture. So the Syrians came in. The war that they waged against those in Samaria was that they just robbed them. They held them up. They took all their stuff. And now, here's what the Bible says. The Bible says that at that time, the head of a donkey was worth 80 shekels. Dove's dung, which means, you know, the number two of a dung. I don't know what they used it for. Obviously, we know that throughout time, you know, number two of animals, when they go to the bathroom, has been used for different things. Sometimes it's been used in food. It's been used for fuel. It's been used for different stuff. So nowadays, when you hear, hey, you know, animals' dung is being used for something, that's not new. So a dove's dung was sold for about 5 pieces of silver. I mean, come on now. Seriously? That is crazy. They barely had any food. They barely had any clothes. They barely had any gold. They barely had anything. They barely were in business down in Samaria. Because of what the Syrians did to them, how they robbed them, how they took everything, how they set total chaos in Samaria. So what happened? Everything went up. Everything was scarce to go up. So people started selling everything really, really high, whatever they had. Astronomical prices. So much so that there was a famine. There was a famine not only because they got robbed, but there was a famine because of what the robbery had resulted in. The lack of business, the lack of growth. it had resulted in so much lack for the people of Samaria that there was a famine. They were going through some tough times. So now the question I got for you today is, as you listen, what do tough times produce in you? What does a tough time bring out of you? Because there are two things that we can learn from a tough time in accordance to what I have seen in the second book of Kings, chapter 6 and chapter 7. Because these were really, really tough times here. I already laid it out. They were selling stuff for astronomical prices. There was a famine in the land. People were hungry. People were broke. People were tired. One day, a lady comes up to the king. And the lady says to the king, "King, I got something to tell you. Things are horrible. So much so that yesterday, me and another woman had come into agreement." This is what tough times do, people. Listen to this. "Me and another woman had come into agreement to boil my son and eat him. And we ate him. And I had agreed with the other woman that the next day we would boil her son and eat him. But now today she has hidden her son." Do you see what tough times produce in certain people? Now, that doesn't have to be what it produces in you, but that is what this woman allowed for it to produce in her. She was so desperate that she boiled her son and made an agreement with another lady that they should boil the other lady's son. But the other lady said, "No way, I'm going to hide my son. I'm going to be selfish and eat your son because that's selfish and murderous. But I'm going to lie on top of that because then I'm going to hide my son because I have no intention of doing that to my child." So we see lies being brought out, murder being brought out, cannibalism being brought out. Really, really dire situation in Samaria at that time. It was crazy. But here's the thing, though. After the king heard that, the prophet in Israel at that time was Elisha. Elisha, one of the greatest prophets of all time. Elisha was brought up by Elijah. Elijah, we know, had 7 recorded miracles in the Bible. Elisha had 14. So Elisha carried the power and the anointing of God. Elisha knew the Lord. Elisha walked with the Lord. He was a man of God. Right after the woman talks with the king, Elisha comes and Elisha says, Tomorrow, listen to what the prophet is telling you. Tomorrow, at this time, everything's going to go back to normal. How is it that we are at record inflation right now, and tomorrow everything is going to go back to normal? And there was a court officer around, and he said, I don't believe it. How can that happen? Is God going to make some windows in heaven? That's what he said. Is God going to make some windows in heaven? And then that's going to happen. That's going to come down. Elisha said, "You're going to see it, but you're not going to eat of it because of his doubt. Be careful if you allow doubt to creep in when tough times come, because that is not the response that God is looking for. The response that God is looking for is the response that he would have is, fear not. God is in control." So there are two things that you could do, ladies and gentlemen. One, you could believe what you see, just like the woman who boiled her son. All she saw was famine. Or you could believe what God is telling you and what God is showing you, like Elisha. And Elisha said, the next day, things will return back to normal. Corn shall be sold at the gate at the normal rate. So what happened was that there were four leprous men. They were tired of being tired. They were tired of being hungry. They were tired of being sick. They were tired of all the things that were going on. They were tired of the desperation. And they went into Syria. But God had put in the ears of Syria that enemies were coming, because they heard horses and they heard chariots, that they were not ready to battle. But what they were actually hearing were the footsteps of those four leprous men that were coming. God made it sound bigger in their ears. And the men of Syria and the women of Syria and the people of Syria went away from that camp. They left all their food, all their clothes. They left everything that they had stolen. Everything that they had grown. They left it there. You know what happened? The four leprous men from Samaria came in. Found nobody in the camp. They didn't know this was going to happen. They found nobody in the camp. And they took back all the food and all the clothes and everything. They got people to come back. They took all the stuff. And guess what? The next day, as the prophet of God said, as God had shown, things were being sold at a normal price. Everything worked out. Everything went well. Everything was under the control and hand and grace of God. So, what do tough times do to you? Do they bring out the best in you, or do you allow them to bring out the worst in you? Are you going to do like the woman who boiled her son and then got deceived? Or are you going to do like the prophet Elisha, who dared to believe God in the worst of times and speak a great thing in the worst of times? Are you going to act like the leprous men, get up and say, I'm going to go do something about this tough time? Because tough times don't last, tough people do. What is going to be your action right now? What are you going to do? How are you going to handle the tough time going on right now in America? How are you going to handle the tough time going on right now in your house? The Bible spells it out clearly. The way that we got to handle tough times is trusting in God, believing what he says, and asking him to see what he sees. Because God is omniscient. He knows all. He sees all. And God can do all. Big things continuing to happen in the NFL. 12 weeks down. We are in week number 13. That week starts tonight. So I want to get to some picks. Cowboys versus the Saints. Now, last week, Thanksgiving, Saints let me down big time, losing to the Bills. I believe it was 31-6, and they were at home. They got the Cowboys this week. For those of you who enjoy some Thanksgiving football, I went 2-1. I don't know how you did, but I won the first two games. I picked the first two games correctly. I wasn't playing them, obviously. But I picked the first two games correctly, and the third game is where I fell. Bears won, Raiders won, and then the Saints got blown out. But the Saints up tonight versus the Cowboys. I got the Cowboys extending their lead in the NFC least, and the Saints dropping a little farther out of the playoffs. I got one of my friends who said, hey, book it. The Saints ain't making the playoffs. He's looking a little more prophetic each and every week with the Saints dropping out right now. And this was before, I just want to say, this was before when he said this. It was before Jameis went down. Because obviously, I would have said, okay, fine. It's not a big deal. If you say book it, then they don't make the playoffs with Jameis. I thought that when Jameis was in, they were going to make the playoffs. They were still, I think, 5-4 at that point. And then Jameis goes down. Obviously, Trevor Siemian comes in. And the Saints ain't looked the same since. But a bucket is a bucket, man. This comes through. My man will look like a genius. If it don't, you know I got to get on him on the air when you book something. But Cowboys and Saints, December 1st, starting out week 13, going with the Cowboys. Bucks and Falcons follow that up on Sunday. I'm going with the Bucks. The Bucks last 4 weeks have looked a little shaky, but it's the Falcons. I'm taking the Bucks, the favorite in that game. Cardinals over the Bears. They're also the favorite in that game. The Bengals and the Chargers. I think that this should be a good one. The Bengals got Joe Burrow. The Chargers got, his name is escaping right now, Justin Herbert. And that's bugged out because Justin Herbert, to me, I think is better when you look on tape than Joe Burrow. I'm out here forgetting the man's name. And I think he's a little bit better. Joe Burrow's no slouch. To all of you Joe Burrow fans listening right now, I am not going to say that Joe Burrow is a slouch, that he's whack, anything like that. I would never say that. The brother's a baller. I think that when I see the tape, when I see the games, I think Justin Herbert just got a little bit more. And let's not forget, Joe Burrow did go down with that devastating injury. Obviously, he has come back. He has looked good. But we know that after an injury, after major surgery, you might not be the same as you were once upon a time. But anyway, with all that being said, I'm going with the Bengals in this game. I think the Bengals are going to win this game. I think that it is going to have big complications on a little something later on that I'm going to get into. But I got the Bengals winning this game, though. It should be a good one. Watch out for this game. Two electric quarterbacks. Two guys that are going to be faces of the league come the future of the NFL. Vikings and Lions. If anybody's picking the Lions and you're on FanDuel or DraftKings or whatever it is, you make a lot of money if the Lions win, because the Lions, I think, are 10-point underdogs or 13-point underdogs, something like that. Obviously, I don't gamble. I don't bet. I'm not condoning it. I'm not telling you to go out and do it. You know, this is a Christian podcast. But, and we do talk about, we do talk about sports, news, things of the world, movies, things like that. We get into that a little bit later on. But all I'm saying is this. You bet on the Lions and they win, you cashing out. If I was a betting man, I wouldn't make that bet. I'm going with the Lions, heavy favorites. I'm sorry, I'm going with the Vikings, heavy, heavy favorites. Lions are terrible, man. They looking just wow. Yeah, I know. Right now, for all of you know who them Steelers fans. Yeah, they tied. I know they tied my Steelers. They're still terrible, though. My Steelers were terrible that week as well. Can't front. Next game, Dolphins, Giants. Giants are the road team here. Dolphins are the favorite. I'm going to go with the Dolphins. Dolphins looked horrible, horrible weeks ago when they were sitting at 2-7. But now they're forming out to be the team that we thought they were going to be. They're 5-7 right now. They're looking to get one game under 500. They're looking to get to stay in that hunt for the 7th and 8th seed. I'm sorry, for the 6th and 7th seed out in the AFC. I think that the Dolphins, as they're forming, as Tua looks a little better and the team is just corresponding to the coach, everybody's getting it right, everybody's getting on the same page, I think that they're, as they are hot right now, I think that they're going to get over the Giants. If the Giants win this game, they are 5-7. And I know that I'm going to see some happy Giants fans and I'm going to see some upset Giants fans. I'll tell you why. There's some Giants fans that I know personally that every time the Giants win, no matter, the Giants are doing terrible and they have the prospect of getting the number one pick, they're happy. They're like, wow, my team won. But there's also Giants fans that I know that they understand. They're a little more realistic. And they say, well, if my team loses and we stink and we could get the number one pick, keep on losing. Team tank. I think they put on the internet, they just like hashtag Team Tank. Yeah, I think that's what they call it. Hashtag Team Tank. That's what they are. So right now, I got some Giants fans that I know. Hashtag Team Tank. Lose every game. Get the best pick you can. And then I got Giants fans that I know that are like, hey, man, I don't care. I just want to see my team win. Well, whatever happens this game, I know I'm going to get some good, entertaining feedback from some of my brothers about these Giants. If they win, whether they lose. Every week for me, I'm not a Giants fan, but every week for me is entertaining to see the Giants, whether they win or lose. What I want to see is what happens if they tie, like my dang, you know, Steelers. That's what I want to see. I want to see what both sides would do or say if the Giants tie. Obviously, I don't think that's going to happen. We don't pick ties on this show, but that'd be entertaining. Just for me, because I know Giants fans on both sides of the aisles. Eagles versus the Jets. Eagles are the favorite. I'm going to go with the Eagles. I believe they're on the road, but I'm going with Philadelphia. They're going to not inch closer to the Cowboys because I think the Cowboys are going to win, but a win is something good for the Eagles. They really need it. I think the only way they could get into the playoffs is by winning the division. Obviously, right now, the math doesn't say so, but the teams that are ahead of them, I believe, are a little better than them. But we shall see. I could be wrong about that because the Eagles are a tricky team to pick. Sometimes they'll come out, they'll play. You think like, oh, man, they're not going to win this game. They come out, they win the game. Sometimes you think, oh, Eagles should have this one in the bag. And they come out and they do the Eagles thing. And they just like, they fall. But I got the Eagles over the Jets. Colts versus Texans. Texans ain't going anywhere. I know they just got their second win the other day, but the Colts are heavy favorites, as well as they should be. Colts have heated up. Carson Wentz looking a little good now, making some people look prophetic, but taking the Colts in this one, heavy favorites. They should win this game. Colts have a nasty, big, strong offensive line. Jonathan Taylor should run amok on these boys right here. Go to work. Quentin Nelson, offensive line, get pushing on that weak defensive line of the Texans and get this win. All right. Washington versus the Raiders. This is the first game of the week that I'm picking the underdog. I am going with Washington. Washington, I was just watching on Monday night versus the Seahawks. They just edged out that game 17-15. I'm sitting here watching. I'm going, man, why don't y'all kick the ball? Y'all going for the touchdown. All you got to do is kick the ball. And I forgot. Kicker got hurt. They had to go for seven. They didn't have somebody reliable in there to come in and kick the ball. Even if it was a chip shot. But they squeaked it out. The defense came up on the two-point conversion against Russell Wilson and them. It was a pickoff at the end of the game. Russell Wilson had a definitive bad throw. You watch the tape and you know, man, Russell Wilson off target on that throw. I think he had a nice space there to get a nice throw off, and he just botched it. Washington came out with the win, 17-15. Tyler Heinicke, I root for this brother. He's an undersized quarterback. He's an undrafted quarterback. He's a quarterback that only had one person come look at him, come scout him, and that was the GM of the Washington football team. And guess what? Right now, they looking average. I thought they would have looked better this season because the defense would have carried them. But let's not forget that Chase Young went down. But the defense showed up and they stopped Russell Wilson and the Seahawks from coming back and tying it and then sending it into overtime. So shout out to Washington. I think even though they're 2.5-point underdogs, I think they get it done this week versus the Raiders. Let's keep it moving. Rams, Jaguars, double digit. This is a double digit game right here, according to the odds makers. I think it's about a 10-point spread or something like that. So they like the Rams by at least 10 points. I'm going to agree on that. Aaron Donald is a man on a mission. We know Von Miller's in there. And that offensive line down in Jacksonville is just weak. Rams, by a blowout. Let's go to the game that your boy right here is interested in. Woo! Steelers-Ravens. Ravens are 4.5-point favorite. But I'm going to tell you what. I think that the Steelers are going to do a favor to the Cincinnati Bengals, who I picked to beat the Chargers. Now, if the Steelers beat the Ravens, then the Bengals are first place in the AFC North. Why? Because they'll be both 8-4. But the Bengals beat the Ravens earlier this season, so they own the tiebreaker right now. So I think that at the end of Sunday, I believe that the Bengals are going to have the number one position yet again in the AFC North. This AFC North is crazy, y'all. This AFC North has been topsy-turvy. The AFC North had the Bengals up about 4 weeks ago, and then they were down in the basement about 2 weeks ago, and now they have a chance to be number one in the division again. The Steelers were number two a little while ago. Now they're in the basement along with the Browns. And then, you know, it's just going back and forth and back and forth. The AFC North right now, to me, is the most fun division in football. I know that before the season started, everybody thought the NFC West, including myself, was the best division in football. Here's the thing, though. That still might be true because the 49ers have made somewhat of a resurgence right now. They're 6-5. And they're not looking that bad the way that they were looking about a month ago. So it might still be the best division in football. But in terms of fun and excitement, and you don't know what you're going to get, man, I'm talking about the AFC North right now. Lamar Jackson, Joe Burrow, the Steelers defense. You got the Browns up and down, topsy-turvy, trading away OBJ, doing all these things. I don't know. The Browns, they got it on paper. They look good on paper. But then they let you down. And then they come up and get a big win. I think the AFC North is so fun right now. But I'm going with the Steelers. They're 4.5-point underdog. I think that that's a good spread. 4.5 is not too bad. You got it within one score. I think the game obviously should be close. Here we go, Steelers. Here we go. Seahawks over the 49ers. The 49ers are 3.5-point favorites. 49ers are the road team. Obviously, you're coming into the 12th man. But the odds makers, they're saying that even though usually you give 3 points to the home team, it's about a 5.5-point swing here. So a big swing going to the 49ers' favor because they're 3.5-point favorites. So the odds makers think that, hey, the odds makers believe that the 49ers are more than a field goal better right now than the Seahawks. That might be true. I'm not saying it ain't. But what I'm saying is this, in terms of this game, 12th man, Seahawks coming off a loss on Monday night versus a lowly team. I think that the Seahawks, man, they're going to be focused. That offense is going to be clicking. And I think that the Seahawks are going to get this win. Russell Wilson is hungry right now for a W, y'all. He's hungry for a W. Seahawks need a dub. I think they get it. Moving on to the resurgent Chiefs versus the Broncos. This is a double-digit game as well, according to the odds makers. I got to agree with them. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. The Broncos started out 3-0, but obviously they didn't play anybody who they didn't play any winning teams in those three games. And then they fizzled out. Now they got average. And I think that right now they're below average. I believe they're 5-6, if I'm not mistaken. But I'm going with the Chiefs to further down the Broncos. Chiefs right now getting hot. The defense over the last 4 or 5 games, I believe, has only given about an average of 10 or 13 points. They're in a stretch right now where the defense is in a groove. They're listening to the defensive coordinator. They're just getting together. They're clicking. So I think that the Chiefs get it done this week. And the Chiefs further their lead in the AFC West. Because to me, I think the Raiders and the Chargers are going to go down this week. And also the Broncos. So it's going to give the Chiefs a little more cushion after week 13, in my opinion. Now, Monday night. Patriots-Bills. This is going to be a good one. The Bills are a 2.5-point favorite. Odds makers think, I got three underdogs winning so far. But I'm going to go with a fourth underdog right now for this week. Week number 13, Monday night game to finish out the week. Bills are 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to go with the Patriots. I said on the podcast before the season started, watch out. This defense right here is going to be top five. Guess what? They have exceeded my expectations, and they are the top defense in the NFL right now, shutting people down, going to work, smash mouth, Bill Belichick type football, run the ball, get the ball back off of turnovers. That's what they're doing. I got to give credit where credit is due. Patriots right now are 8-4. They win this game over the favored Bills. That should put Coach Bill Belichick in the prime seat for Coach of the Year as of right now, if they win this game. But let's not forget, he's got a rookie quarterback. He doesn't have a superstar wide receiver or a superstar running back. So he doesn't have a superstar at quarterback, running back, or wide receiver, or tight end. And the Patriots are getting it done on defense and timely offense. I think that spells Coach of the Year for me if they continue on this trend right here. Before the season started, I predicted they will go 11-6. Right now, that's looking pretty good. They might even exceed that. And if they exceed that, come on, we got to talk about Bill Belichick versus Cliff Kingsbury. Got to talk about that because the Patriots are exceeding expectations. I know a lot of football people before the season, they had the Patriots, some second, some had them third. Nobody had the Jets getting out the basement. We all know that. And they haven't gotten out the basement, and they won't get out the basement. But some had the Patriots third behind the Dolphins because the Dolphins had a good year last year. They exceeded some expectations. I wasn't one of those. This show was not one of those shows. This show right here said the Patriots going to win 11 games. This is looking like they might win more than that. This show right here said Patriots top five defense. They've exceeded that. Shout out to Bill Belichick. Shout out to the young rookie who's not making mistakes right now. Not making a lot of mistakes. Managing the game. Getting the Patriots across the finish line. But let's not fool ourselves. The defense is what's winning these people these games. That is the number one weapon of this team. The defense. But I think the defense gets it done this week. The Bills, they've been a part of some blowouts the last couple weeks. Some they've lost. Some they've won. I think that this game, 2.5, man, the Bills have looked shaky. The Bills have looked shaky. I know that they're a 2.5-point favorite, so the odds makers are saying that this game is going to be within a field goal. I'm going to go with the Patriots winning this by at least 10 points. Two scores. I just think that the Bills are really shaky right now. But they got another game coming up later on in the season. We'll see how that goes. I'm not saying that the Patriots are going to win the division outright, because the Bills still got a shot at this thing, especially if they win this week. But I'm going with the Patriots this week, week number 13. Those are my week 13 picks. The NFL is exciting. The NFL is fun. The NFL is getting ramped up. And I'm loving it. We getting closer and closer to the playoffs. Week number 13. Let's see what it brings us. So I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. He's the biggest Packers fan that I know. His name is Jeremiah Raider. Yeah, I know. Sounds weird. Raider, Packer. I get it. But that's his name. God gave him Jeremiah Raider. All right. Anyway, so I was talking to him about the Odell Beckham Jr. story and how it is out there that OBJ almost went to the Packers, but he chose to go to the Rams. So his response, I'm going to play it to you. It's a little lengthy, but stick with me here. It's about 3 minutes, but this is a Packers fan going in on the Packers. And if you think that Aaron Rodgers didn't have any reason to do what he did, hear the heart and the mind of a Packer fan that has been riding with this team forever in his football fandom. Check this out, my man Jeremiah Raider going in on the Packers.
I didn't honestly think that Odell Beckham would go to Green Bay because at the end of the day, like going to LA just makes more sense for him. He's an LA boy. However, the fact that we could have had a legit number two receiver and our front office is so stinking cheap that they're unwilling to pony up and give him an extra $200,000 to $300,000, which is, like you said, man, peanuts in the NFL, peanuts. They're so stinking cheap. And this is the problem with the Packers. I love my team. I will always root for them. But ever since I can remember, they're like the yard sailors of the NFL. Like, they go to Jubilee and buy used clothing instead of going and buying a new pair of shoes every now and then. Like, they won't spend money. Oh, it drives me nuts. Like, we've had so many good players. We draft and develop, which is fine. But when you hit a home run in the draft, you develop them, and then you let them walk in their fourth year after their rookie contract is up. You're just like, oh, we'll get another one. No, you won't. Like, we had Brett Favre for how many years? One Super Bowl win. We had Aaron Rodgers for how many years? One Super Bowl win. Why? Because we won't invest in the team. Like, at the end of the day, they do enough to fuel a competitive roster. But that's it. They won't go all in. And I've said it for years. I'm like, I would rather have an all-in season and win the Super Bowl than as opposed to being really just good for forever. Like, the goal is to win the Super Bowl, not go 10-6. The goal is to get that Lombardi Trophy back to Titletown, not to go 11-5 every year. That's the goal. Either you're all in or you're not. And we're not. Like, at the end of the day, they're like, we have Favre. We'll go 10-6. We're cool. We've got Rodgers. We'll go 12-4. We're cool. Like, get the man some help. And, okay, like, as much as I don't agree with Rodgers on everything, I think he's a little dramatic. I think he can be a diva sometimes. If putting myself in his shoes, I'd feel the same way. Like, if my team won't commit to get the job done and won't commit to get me the players I need, I'll go somewhere where they will. Like, it drives me nuts. Like, you look at teams like the Rams. They got Von Miller. They got OBJ. They're all in. They're sacrificing future picks to go win now, which is the whole goal of the stinking football season. Go win now. And we're too cheap. We won't do it. Because, like, okay, Devontae Adams gets quadruple teamed on every play because Rodgers throws in the ball 19 times a game because we have no one else. It's Devontae Adams, an A-plus player, with a bunch of C-plus guys. You go get OBJ, and even, like you said, he's going to be a decoy. Cool. All of a sudden, they can't triple team Adams every play. They have to shade the safety his way a little bit. They have to pull coverage a little bit. At least respect OBJ. That means Devontae, instead of triple teamed, is only double teamed. Or, heaven forbid, single teamed. Like, matchups are everything. And we're too cheap.
So that was my man Jeremiah Raider. biggest Packer fan I know, giving his opinion on the Packers, the OBJ situation. Obviously, you just heard him go in. You just heard him go in and talk about the cheapness of his squad, of his franchise that he has rooted for years. And I got to say, brother, I agree with you. I agree with everything you said right there. Devontae Adams being triple teamed, double teamed on every play. He's still getting his numbers. But man, you could have had somebody come in and you could have had somebody be a decoy, which is what I initially, you know, proposed to him and told him that could have been something that the Packers could have did had they brought in OBJ. And that's why he mentioned at the end that, heaven forbid, wow, Devontae Adams could get single covered. Now, Devontae Adams gets single covered on a play or two, something like that. Watch out, because if Aaron Rodgers sees that, he's getting the ball right to Devontae. Devontae Adams always has the advantage on the guy covering him when it comes to speed and quickness and height. I mean, at least two of them. But if he gets an advantage in every area against a defender and he's one-on-one, you better go to Devontae Adams. And Aaron Rodgers knows that. So I know that Packer Nation, I know that guys like Jeremiah, they definitely wanted Odell Beckham Jr. I wanted to see Odell Beckham Jr. I'm not a Packers fan. I'm just an Aaron Rodgers fan. So I know that Aaron Rodgers, with this guy in the lineup as a second receiver, as my man said, a legit second receiver. Man, what could have happened? Because me, I'd rather line up opposite. I'd rather line up next to Aaron Rodgers than Matt Stafford. I like Matt Stafford. I think Matt Stafford was just what the doctor ordered in LA for the Rams. Obviously, we see that going down. They're 7-4 right now. They're on a little skid, but we've seen what they could be. And I still got them as my Super Bowl pick. Let's not forget that. I ain't jumping off that. I haven't jumped off of that either. Rams, I still got them winning the Super Bowl. They don't look good right now in this moment. But Matt Stafford, we know he could play. Even with all that being said, I'd rather line up next to Aaron Rodgers. I know what the man has done. I know what the man can do. You seen it. I seen it. Tape don't lie. Aaron Rodgers is one of the greatest of all time. But here's the problem. And as I told my man Jeremiah, and as he responded to me, you heard that I said, yes, peanuts. A couple hundred grand in the NFL. Peanuts. Now, a couple hundred grand to you and me will change our lives. Most people listening to this change our lives. But not to players in the NFL, not to an NFL franchise. So the Packers come out here. Here's the story. Packers come out here. They get a meeting with OBJ. They offer him $1 million. That's the veteran's minimum. Rams come out. They say, hey, we give you $1.25 million for the rest of the year. So you sitting here to tell me, are you going to tell me Mark Murphy? Are you going to tell me Brian Gutekunst that a Super Bowl win, the first in 11 years, is not worth, or 12 years better said, in 12 years is not worth an extra $300,000, $400,000, $500,000? Are you serious? Are you kidding me? A Super Bowl, a Lombardi Trophy, even a berth in the Super Bowl is not worth $300,000, $400,000, $500,000. They offer him 1.25. You definitely have to offer him at least 1.3 to make it seem like, hey, we offered him more. Because we want to win. We're dedicated to our fans, our players, our organization. We think that this brother could come in here, do some work, get us at least to the Super Bowl with the team that we have, because we have constructed a good roster. And he's an addition. He's a piece on the offensive end. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to sit back. We're going to hold tight. with an A-plus receiver and a bunch of C receivers, like you just heard Jeremiah say. That's the plan of the Green Bay Packers. That's what Aaron Rodgers is dealing with right now. Dudes that are saying, we got you one guy on the offensive side of the ball. Work it out. It's Aaron Rodgers, Devontae Adams, and everybody else. I know that this sounds like a slight to Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones is a terrific back. Aaron Jones is a B-plus running back in the NFL. He's a dual threat. He can catch the ball coming out the backfield a little bit. He's not Alvin Kamara. He's not what Marshall Faulk was. But Aaron Jones is a dang good running back. I understand that. But let's not kid ourselves here. Don't kid yourself. This offense is Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. And a lot of helpers. But there's no elite helper on the offense side of the ball. Oh, you don't believe me? Second half. Last year, opening drive of the NFC Championship game. Aaron Jones gets the ball. What happened? Boom! Fumble. The game had already been turned around momentum-wise by the last play of the first half when Scotty Miller went over the top on Kevin King and extended that lead. Instead of just giving the Bucs a field goal, the defense gave up a touchdown. But then they come out and Aaron Jones, boom, fumble. He's a good running back, but he's not an elite running back. I'd like to have him on my team, but I'm making the case that, hey, Aaron Rodgers has one elite weapon on the offensive side of the ball. Okay, if you want to say two, because David Bakhtiari, the left tackle, top three tackle in the league, all right, fine. But David Bakhtiari has been hurt the last two seasons on and off. He wasn't in that NFC Championship game. Right now, as I speak, he hasn't been there for the last couple weeks. Bakhtiari getting a little old. He's one of the best. He's getting a little old. So it's Aaron Rodgers and Devontae Adams. And because you couldn't shell out an extra $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, which is peanuts in the NFL. Peanuts. What you gonna say? What you gonna do? How you gonna show face to Aaron Rodgers and Packer Nation? Again, if you think that Aaron Rodgers shouldn't have done what he did in the offseason, this right here shows you that Aaron Rodgers should have did what he did in the offseason and probably even more. He got 1 year voided. He'll probably be traded next season. Maybe. He probably should have pushed a little harder. Probably. Probably should have put a report out there that Jeopardy was knocking on the door really, really hard. Maybe. I don't know. But this is the kind of stuff right here that Aaron Rodgers has been trying to tell people about for a couple dollars. Because for in my terms and in most people listening terms right now, it's a couple dollars. If we put it in our terms, it's a couple dollars because a couple hundred grand in the NFL is chump change. Couple dollars. Yeah, I know it sounds bad, but it's a multi-billion dollar corporation. Couple bucks. Jeremiah also said that the Packers are, and he's completely right by this statement right here, the Packers are comfortable going 10-6, 11-5. And looking on to next year and the year after that, they're very, very conservative when it comes to that. The Rams are not conservative. The Rams are going all in right now. The Rams got Von Miller. The Rams went out and got Matt Stafford. The Rams are making sure they went out and got Jalen Ramsey. They want to win right now. But the Packers every single year are content with saying we got 10, 11, 12, 13 wins, and we'll be good next year again. Yeah, you'll be good, but will you be the best? That's the problem that the Packers have. they continue to say we'll be good next year. But they don't ever ask them, but they don't ask themselves, will we be the best? Packers need a new attitude. Basically, what I'm saying is either they get new management or management has a turn a new leaf and get a new attitude, get a new mindset. We want to be good now. We want to win now. We want to get Aaron Rodgers a second championship now. Y'all heard Jeremiah. One win, one Super Bowl win for Brett Favre. One Super Bowl win for Aaron Rodgers. You got Eli Manning. He got two Super Bowl wins. He ain't as good as those guys, but he got two. Packers need to step it up. I don't know what else to say. Stop acting cheap, y'all. It's the holiday season. Christmas is right around the corner. And one of the most debated things around the Christmas tree this time of year. No, it's not politics. It is whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. I know. You sit around the tree, you pop in the DVD. Some say it's a Christmas movie, some say it's not a Christmas movie, but I'm here to clear up the debate today. That's right. I'm here to clear up the debate of whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. So, with it being the season, the time for snow, the time for miracles, the season of miracles, the time of Santa, Rudolph, and everything else in between, I'm going to settle the debate on whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. You know why? Because I sat down this week and I saw Die Hard once again. 4K Ultra. Shout out to Black Friday. Great deals. 4K Ultra HD. It was only $10 at Best Buy. Great deal. Great deal. Bunch of other movies. On sale. Y'all know how it goes. Black Friday. Can't beat it. So I went out. I bought it. Even though I had it. But I had it on just, I had it on standard definition. That's straight trash. Got to get the better quality, better sound, brighter lights, all that. Why have a TV if you can't use it? That's beside the point. But Die Hard, Christmas movie or not, you decide. I put up the question for the Spotify listeners because I know that most of the listeners are Apple users, but the second most downloaded medium on this show right here is Spotify. I can't put up a question that could be interacted with on Apple or any of the other places that you listen to it, only on Spotify, because Anchor is owned by Spotify. So it's like a direct connection. So if you listen through Apple or anywhere else, if you have Spotify on your phone, your device, whatever it is that you listen to, how you listen to, go on Spotify. Answer the question after you listen to this here argument or this here schooling on whether Die Hard is a Christmas movie or not. So here we go. Die Hard. The movie came out in 1988. Starring Bruce Willis and Bonnie Bedelia, Alan Rickman. We all know that. Just wanted to refresh for those who forgot and for those who've never seen it. That's who stars in the movie. All right. So Die Hard, it starts out in the air. John McClane is landing on Christmas Eve in Los Angeles. He's a New York cop. Okay, I know you say Christmas Eve. That's not Christmas. All right, I'll get there. Trust me. Hold on. Take the ride with me. I'm going to get you to where we need to go. John McClain lands as a limo driver on Christmas Eve. Takes him to the Nakatomi Plaza where his wife is at. She's at a holiday party for her company. And on the way to the party, John asks Argyle to put Christmas music on the radio. Now, the Christmas song that he puts on is called Christmas in Hollis. That's by Run DMC. Okay, here we go. Argyle says, "This is Christmas music, man." Obviously, because he's playing the song I just said. It's a little different kind of Christmas music, but it's Christmas music nonetheless. Christmas in Hollis. They get to Nakatomi Plaza. John goes upstairs, sees Holly for the first time in months. And Holly is on the phone with Lucy McClain, who later pops up in one of the Die Hard films. But here, she's a little girl. And Holly, her mom, is telling her not to snoop around. But before they get off the phone, Holly says, "Hey, is Daddy going to come home? I'd love to see him. Is he going to be here for Christmas?" And Holly says, "Me and Santa are going to work on that." Check that out. Before they get off the phone, Holly tells Lucy not to snoop around for Christmas presents. You tell me. When John gets downstairs to Nakatomi Plaza, before he comes up on the elevator to the 30th floor, John sees a Christmas tree in the lobby of Nakatomi Plaza. So we got some more Christmas stuff going on in this flick right here. The security guard tells him where to go. This is before he sees Holly, before he goes upstairs. He's still in the lobby. John is whistling Jingle Bells right before he rides the elevator upstairs. So now, John goes upstairs. He goes into the office, Holly's office. And there's a Santa figure on her office cabinet. A big Santa figure. Next to that, there's like a little Santa workshop house. And next to that, there's like a little big ornament. So there's like three figurines on her office cabinet. I watched the movie, y'all. I'm telling you what I saw. I didn't go online and I didn't research none of this. Nothing that I'm telling you right now, I didn't get off of any.com or anybody else's thoughts. I didn't get off of anybody else's deliberations or summaries. I watched the movie myself again, probably for like the 50th time. Anyway, here we go. We keep on going. Obviously, like I said before, John is at Holly's company Christmas party. At the party, Holly's company gives her a Rolex as a Christmas bonus. You tell me, is this a Christmas movie or not? Then we get on in the movie, a little while passes, a couple of things happen. Obviously, we know by this time, Hans Gruber and his group came in and they took over Nakatomi Plaza, killed a couple people, took some hostages. And now John is running around barefoot. John is trying to save the day. He's trying to do this smartly. He's trying not to get caught because he knows there's a couple terrorists in the building. New York City cop, he understands what to do. He understands what he has to do to survive. So, movie's going on. They find out that John is snooping around the building, that John's trying to play cowboy, that he's trying to play the hero. So then they send Tony after him. And he kills Tony. This is the first guy, the first terrorist that John kills in the movie. It's Tony. Now him and Tony have a fight. They go down the stairs. They roll down the stairs. Tony, he dies. What John does next is he takes Tony, puts him on the elevator, sits him down on the office chair, puts him on the elevator, and sends him down to where Hans Gruber and the hostages are at. Now, when the elevator door opens, what do you see? Tony is in a Santa hat, and his sweater says, "Now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho." So we didn't get to see Santa throughout the movie. But we got to see a Santa hat and a Santa sweater. So John McClane is coming home to visit his wife and children for the holidays. But guess what happens? Some terrorists decide they're going to do something a little different. Criminals get in the way of them celebrating Christmas when they had planned to celebrate Christmas. So as the movie continues on, we see that Sergeant Al Powell, right? This is the father from Family Matters. Everybody would know him as Carl Winslow. But in this movie, before he hit it big, he was Sergeant Al Powell. John McClane radios in for help. He finds a way to get to the police, through like CB radio. And John McClane, you know, triggers them off. And all of a sudden, they tell Sergeant Al Powell, "Hey, go check out Nakatomi Plaza." He checks it out. He sees nothing so far. Meanwhile, there's some stuff going on in the roof, some shooting. But he doesn't see, he doesn't hear. When they come, he's kind of, when he comes, they're kind of quiet. And what happens? He leaves. He tells the security guard, "Sorry for wasting your time." He goes into the car, right? Before he goes into the car, he starts humming and singing "Let It Snow." Now you tell me, what do you think so far? Christmas movie or not? Now, after he hums and sings "Let Us Know," he gets in his car and bang! That's when Marco's dead body hits the windshield, and this is where the movie picks up, because now the police are getting involved. And now he's radioing in for help, and now things about to go buck wild. Movie goes on for a little while. Crazy things happen. Some action happens. And then a little while later, Hans Gruber, the leader of the terrorists, calls in to check on Cleo. Cleo is his computer whiz, the computer guy he brought along to hack the computers of Nakatomi and the Nakatomi Corporation so that they could get into the vault and get some promissory notes. They want to collect 20% while they're on the beach, money that they didn't earn. So they're thieves. They're terrorists. I know. But they're in the midst of trying to open all of these vaults through computer. That's Cleo's job. And Hans is asking Cleo, "Hey, did you open everything yet? Did you get it done yet?" Time is passing. Hours are passing. Cleo says, "Not yet. But I'm going to be able to get them open. But the seventh one, I cannot get open because it is has an electromagnetic field. So you're going to need a miracle to get the seventh one open." Hans tells Cleo, "Cleo, it's Christmas. and it's the time of miracles. Be of good cheer. I'm just saying. That's what Han said. So you let me know. Christmas movie or not. Time goes on a little more. After Hans gets in contact with Cleo, Hans decides to go up himself, try to get some detonators that John had taken from Marco, who had died, who John obviously had killed, thrown out the window, things like that. Hans goes up, meets John. You know, they're acting like, you know, they don't know each other and things like that. They're trying to keep it cool at the moment. And then obviously the big reveal comes. He's John McClane. And then McClane figures out that Hans is Hans, even though Hans gave him a different name, Bill Clay, and put on an accent. He still figures it out. Hans Gruber's boys come up. They start shooting up at John. John starts running, barefoot and all. They hand Hans a semi-automatic weapon. I'm sorry, an automatic weapon. They start shooting glass. They start shooting at John. John starts shooting at them. And in the midst of that shootout, John shoots a Santa figurine that is on top of somebody's desk. So throughout the movie, they're still trying to let you know, hey, this is Christmas. Christmas time. Little while passes on, movie continues on, some more action goes on, some more things go on, and now we get into the end of the movie. So now at the end of the movie, by this time, Hans Gruber has figured out that Holly is John's wife. He takes Holly personally hostage. The other hostages are on the roof with some of the other terrorists. But Holly has to stay with Hans Gruber. He takes her. John finds them. This is the second to last scene of the movie. John comes in. He has an automatic weapon in his hand. It's just Hans Gruber and the fake security guard. And obviously, their hostage, Holly Gennaro, Holly McClane, whichever one you want to call, that's up to you. Her door says Holly Gennaro, I'm going to call her Holly Gennaro. So, John comes in. Him and Hans talk. Hans says, put the gun down. John puts the gun down, puts his hands over his head. John starts maniacally laughing. After Hans Gruber said, hey, what that thing you told me earlier before I kill you, that was yippee-ki-yay. John starts laughing maniacally like, yeah, that's what I said. Now, you see John with his hands behind his head. And then all of a sudden, the camera goes to his back, drops down, and there's a gun on his back with tape holding it together. This tape says this. Season's greetings. And it's white with green jingle bell, with a gold jingle bell and green leaves. Obviously, John tells Holly, watch out, shoots Hans in the chest, shoots the security guard in the head. Hans is falling through the window, grabs Holly, and then in slow motion, after John gets there to try to save Holly, in slow motion, you see Hans pointing the gun and about to shoot John and Holly. John takes the watch off of Holly's wrist, which Hans is holding on to at this time. He's holding on to the band of the watch. He takes that off. All you see is Hans Gruber's face. He's in surprise because he didn't think he was about to fall. And obviously, sadly, he falls 30 stories, big thud. So all the terrorists right now, they're gone. They're done. John gets rid of the team. John saves the day. The last scene of the movie, they go downstairs after all the fighting is over, after everything is done. And before getting into the limo, John and Argyle say to each other, "Merry Christmas." That's what they said. So the movie started on Christmas Eve, and by the time that they do all the fighting, by the time that they do all the hiding, by the time that they do all this back and forth, negotiations with the FBI, cutting off the power, waiting about 3 hours for all the vaults to be open and things like that, everything is all done. The whole thing is over. The whole shebang is over. The whole debacle is over. They say Merry Christmas to each other. That means that all this time had passed and it had turned into Christmas. John came in on Christmas Eve. He left on Christmas. Came into the building on Christmas Eve. Left the building on Christmas Day. Him and Argyle said Merry Christmas. After they say Merry Christmas to each other, Argyle closes the door to the limo. He comes to the back of the limo. The camera focuses on his face. Argyle says, "If this is your idea of Christmas, then I gotta be here for New Year's." Argyle goes around, goes into the limo. The camera focuses on the back of the limo where Bruce Willis and Bonnie Bedelia are kissing as the credits come up. And what do you hear? "Let It Snow" by Vaughn Monroe and his orchestra. Don't forget that also throughout the movie, "Winter Wonderland" was played. "Ode to Joy" was played. I didn't want to leave that out, but that's the way that the movie went. So now, get around your Christmas tree. Get the family. And let them know, Die Hard is a Christmas movie. And not only is Die Hard a Christmas movie, Die Hard is the greatest Christmas movie of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in to another episode of All Talks of Life with Chris Beniquez. I'll be back before the holiday talking whatever we got to talk. But I hope you enjoy your holiday season as it kicks off. And I just want to thank you for riding with me. I want to thank you because this show right here, it's just fun. You guys make it fun. I love it. I love to continue to do this. So I'm going to continue to do what I got to do. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate you, and I pray that your Christmas and the Christmas season is blessed. All right, I'm out.
All Talks of Life with Chris Beniquez.